Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Sometimes it's really important not to be blinded by your own perceptions about what's acceptable and what isn't.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in a special episode of Invest Like a Pro, presented by Housefinder, we're chatting with expert buyer's agent Simon Liu. We're diving into the topic of quality versus quantity, why having a balance of both in your portfolio is important, and how it mitigates risk, why the best quality suburbs aren't always the best to buy into, and much, much more. Hey! We start off with Liu sharing his opinion on quantity versus quality.
I don't think there is any right or wrong. You know, I think it's dependent on different situations. Depending on different goals as well. You know, as investors, we all have our own individual goals that we want to try and achieve. And the other thing I wanted to stress is, you know, just because I buy a lot of quantity type properties, it doesn't mean that you have to forego quality either. You know, so I think it's definitely a good thing to have a balance, and I'll kind of explain a little bit why. I'll break it down into three simple points, I guess you can say, why I think quantity is equally as important as quality. The first reason is there's much less risk having lower loan amounts spread across multiple assets. You know, so if you had, let's say, a maximum borrowing power over the life of your investment journey of $5 million, you know, if you had two or three super, super nice blue chip houses, you know, within that $5 million loan limit, then you're just exposing yourself to three houses at the end of the day during that whole ownership period, you know, exposing yourself to most likely extremely low rental yields. You're exposing yourself to three tenants only. You're exposing yourself, you know, to three kitchens, three physical houses that has each will have its own maintenance issues over time. And look, I mean, I think we discussed this in a previous podcast, but the reality of owning investment properties is that you're just maintaining headaches and issues that come up during the ownership period. So what do I mean when I say by headaches? I'm talking about maintenance. I'm talking about busted hot water tanks. I'm talking about broken stoves. I'm talking about, you know, tenants. I'm talking about vacancies. I'm talking about bad tenants, you know, tenants who fall behind in rents. Now, if you have a $5 million loan amount or loan limits or $5 million property portfolio, and you've got, and within that loan amount, you've only got three properties. If one of those properties go through a vacancy or go through a maintenance issue or an insurance claim, then it's going to hurt you extremely severely in your back pocket, you know, from a passive income perspective, because you've only got two properties that are, you know, doing what it's supposed to be doing. And look, I mean, heaven forbid if you had two properties that are going through some kind of, you know, situation where it's not producing rent or producing income, you're going to be in an even bigger hole. Now, we all talk about, you know, buying property for capital growth, which is great. We all have the aim of these properties going up in value, but a lot of people forget that for between the time of you buying the property and capital growth happening, it can be several years, and it often is several years, you know, up to 10 years or even more. So it's always about, you know, during that 10-year period, how are you sort of maintaining ownership consistently of these properties, and you know, ensuring that you're not ever in a position where you're forced to sell. Because when you're forced to sell, in, and if it's a bad market, then it's obviously not a very good thing for any investor.
We delve into how having a balance of quality and quantity in your property portfolio can help avert risk.
So I think balance is key. You know, I'm not suggesting that people go out and buy $100,000, you know, units or whatever out in Woolworth. But I think there's got to be a balance. I mean, you know, in any capital city, for example, in Australia, you know, you've got your extremely wealthy, nice set blue chip areas, and then you've got your extremely sort of lower socioeconomic areas. I think somewhere in the middle is always a good balance for what I would consider like an investment grade type property. You know, those are the kinds of areas where it's the majority of people, of households, can afford to buy to rent. Those are the kinds of properties that have the biggest potential to gentrify over time and become more sort of quote-unquote upper class. And those are the kinds of properties that are always in demand from a rental perspective, from a buying and selling perspective. From a risk management perspective, I feel like that these kinds of properties are definitely probably more a safer bet, let's just say. You know, bringing me, I guess, to my second point, which is having safety in numbers. So, you know, if you have a portfolio of just three very expensive properties, you know, like I said, and if two of them are struggling, then you've only got one property producing income, you're going to be having a hard time for at least that short amount of period. But if let's say you don't have 20 properties, let's say you've got 10 properties, you know, which is quite realistic for a long-term investor. If your goal is, let's say, passive income, and you've been investing for 10, 20 years to accumulate 10, you know, sort of middle ring suburb type properties, you know, if one of them is struggling, having a vacancy, if two of them or even three or four of them are struggling, you've still got a whole bunch of properties doing what it's supposed to be doing from a cash flow perspective, you know, from a tenancy perspective, you know, so your head is still above water. So you can still wait it out, if that makes sense. You know, because the goal, as I said before, is obviously for these properties to go up in value eventually, but you know, you need to be able to sit it out. You need to be able to wait it out for that to happen. And look, I mean, having 10 or so properties in more sort of affordable areas also brings in higher rental yields, which means that you just have more cash flow over time.
Having a quantity of quality properties in your portfolio is a way to safeguard yourself if something unexpected might occur in your life.
The third point is that if you have more cash flow, you're just in a much less risky position, because most of us, you know, investors, we're not super high income earners earning millions of dollars a year in our day jobs. If we're earning, you know, let's say combined income of $150,000, you know, having one or two properties may already negatively geared may already be eating into your weekly expenses, your monthly expenses. But having that cash flow just backing you up along the way just ensures that whatever situation you might be in, it's less likely that you'll have to dip into your own back pocket to maintain properties if they are struggling, going through a bit of a bad patch or struggling a little bit from time to time. So I really do feel like, in short, those kinds of three points is the reason why I feel like having quality properties in quality areas where all the fundamentals stack up, but not ensuring that the loan amounts tied against each asset is quite low, you know, ensuring that you're spreading your capital across multiple assets. And also, you know, if you were in a position, let's say, for example, you had a bad personal issue come up and you have to liquidate some of your properties, you had to sell down some of your portfolio, you've got more options. If you've got 10 properties, you know, if you wanted to sell, let's say, half that portfolio, you're still left with another half that's, you know, hopefully producing enough passive income to see you out that particular bad patch or whatever situation you're dealing with.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve into some of the common mistakes that property investors make.
Because I think naturally people in property at least always aspire to buy the best quality suburb that they can afford, which sometimes from an investing perspective is a mistake.
How you can mitigate risk in your property portfolio.
It's all just about having a balance. You know, ensuring that you've got cash flow, ensuring that you're spreading that risk across multiple loans, multiple properties, you know, is important.
And that's next. I'm Tarun Sharm, and you're listening to Property Investory. Have you been looking for months and getting frustrated that each property you've seen seems to be a lemon? Or are you after distressed, off-market, high cash flow properties in high growth areas, capital city locations? If you answered yes to either of these questions, you are not alone. For being a loyal listener of the podcast, Simon Liu is offering a free one-hour strategy session normally valued at $500 to help put together an actionable property plan. To get your free strategy session, simply visit housefinder.com.au and fill out the contact form or call Simon directly on 0415 626 342 and quote Property Investory. The location that you buy into is very important, but that does not always mean looking to buy in the best quality suburbs.
Sydney's a very unique market. Like, you could have thrown a dart on a map in 2009, you know, anywhere in Sydney, and you would have made, you know, 100% growth in the subsequent sort of 5 to 8 years. You know, even in the super lower socioeconomic areas, you know, places like Mount Druitt and those kinds of places has experienced extreme amount of growth, and in most cases, even more percentage-wise than a lot of the more sort of blue-chip areas. I think it comes down to, like, quality, I think, is one of those things that a lot of people have various opinions on. You know, like, you know, using Sydney as an example, I guess the two main areas where a lot of people aspire to own property are on the North Shore and in the eastern suburbs. These are always considered to be the more sort of blue chip, and maybe parts of the inner west as well, you know, more sort of blue chip areas where people want to end up in terms of where they want to live. But I think, you know, over time, it's really interesting to see how growth happens and where growth happens, because I think we've talked about this in a previous podcast about affordability. You know, for a $2 million house, which is generally what, you know, an average house would cost, you know, in what you would consider a blue chip area in Sydney, you know, for that to double in value to $4 million, you're starting to get into a realm where it's extremely unaffordable for the majority of the population. You know, whereas if you're starting out with a property that's maybe worth $800,000, you know, still in a decent suburb, not in a, you know, very low socioeconomic area, albeit me, you know, maybe in sort of borderline working class / middle class areas, you know, for that property to be worth $1.6 million in 5 years or 10 years time, that's I would consider socially a more realistic outcome, you know, based on median income standards, you know, based on affordability. You know, a lot of people talk about capital growth, and obviously quality is tied in a lot with the capital growth potential. But I think at the end of the day, nobody has a crystal ball. So the question is kind of just like I said initially, it's all just about having a balance. You know, ensuring that you've got cash flow, ensuring that you're spreading that risk across multiple loans, multiple properties, you know, is important. But also buying in areas where the growth potential, not only from an infrastructure and government spending and, you know, location to shop, schools and transport, but also from an affordability perspective, is also quite important. And I think is one of those things that become a little bit missed when people do their research, because I think naturally people in property at least always aspire to buy the best quality suburb that they can afford. Which sometimes from an investing perspective is a mistake.
I agree with you on that, because, you know, I take a look at my own example. I remember back then going and looking at particular suburbs that I was very interested in back more than a decade ago, around the Ryde area kind of thing. And I had learned from, I guess, speaking to a few experts and also a few coaches in property investment, that they said, look, you should try to find properties that are around those suburbs that are not so already priced up quite highly. So I said, all right, well, I'm going to have a look at Ermington. Ermington is pretty much one of the suburbs sort of on the outer rings of Ryde area. And it was still reasonably priced. And I could have picked up a place down there for about 370,000 that was pretty much on the water, but it just needed a little bit of work. You know, renovation might have cost about 20,000 to do. Now that particular property, I know when I looked back there, which is a missed opportunity, was worth over $1 million. And that's because I guess those suburbs have picked up because the affordability back then, and I think back then when we were looking at Ryde, it was still at least about $500,000 to $600,000 to be able to purchase a house in the Ryde area. So there was at least $200,000 difference in terms of pricing based on just basically in the next suburb. And that would have been a 5-minute drive around the corner. And I think from an investor's point of view, if you can find suburbs like that that are more or less up and coming, you know, over the long term, they will be a lot better to buy in. Same thing, as you said, Mount Druitt, it's pretty much very close to Penrith. And Penrith is also a very, very well-known CBD hub. If it wasn't that close to that, then it wouldn't be worth so much. But because of that, it's had such a huge amount of growth. And I think that's the reason why it's attracted so many people who can afford to buy in those properties in and around those areas. So it is very important to look at it from that point of view, because that's where potentially quality does come into play.
And bad quality areas, like, you know, that example that you gave there is important, because, you know, quality is a perception, you know, and bad quality areas, once perceived as bad quality, can change very, very rapidly.
Lou shares with us some of the suburbs that have grown in quality over time and what buying into these areas can do for your portfolio.
And even, like, you know, suburbs now that are considered up, you know, quite expensive, like, you know, parts of the Ryde area, you know, leading onto areas like Carlingford and Tilopia and, like, more around areas like around Parramatta. You know, you've got areas like Toongabie and those kinds of pockets where previously, you know, it would have been considered, you know, quite run down, quite lower socioeconomic. Now would be considered, you know, very standard, average family, middle-class type areas. So perceptions change over time, and it usually comes down to affordability at the end of the day. You know, everyone obviously aspires to be in the best suburb possible, but it comes to a point where they simply can't afford it. I'm talking about the mass population, and they immediately gentrify the next best thing, you know, and it just kind of creeps out to the point where, you know, you've got areas that used to be, you know, looked down upon, suddenly become very expensive areas. I think actually Balmain is a very, very good example, because Balmain years and years and years and years and years ago used to be very sort of working class, you know, very blue collar area. It was considered a very rough area as well. But now in Balmain, I mean, you know, your 2-3 bedroom terrace houses, you're looking at $2 million, you know, on tiny blocks of land as well. So, you know, things change over time. And I think at the end of the day, you know, if you strip away all the, I guess you could say all the fat and all the, you know, moving parts of ongoing property investment, you know, it really comes down to, you know, properties in well-located fundamental areas, you know, that will increase over time. But the question is how much time. So, you know, if you own one $500,000 house and it increases by 10%, then you make $50,000 in equity. But if you own 10 $500,000 houses and it increases by 10%, then you make $500,000 in equity. But the trick is, like, how do you accumulate 10 $500,000 properties, and how do you maintain them over that 5 or 10 year period to realize that capital growth? I think is the real question that a lot of investors, long-term investors, need to ask themselves, rather than trying to guess, I guess, you know, the next hotspot and, you know, guess the next growth area. So that balance between quality versus quality quantity, I think, is very important.
When you're investing in property, it is vital that you don't get in your own way and let your emotions dictate your decisions.
I think at the end of the day, you know, maybe some tips and advice for any investors, or maybe even new investors out there, is to not not get too caught up in your own perceptions about what is an acceptable area to buy in or an acceptable suburb. I see this a lot with my own clients, especially very, very new clients. You know, they want to stay within 10 kilometers of the CBD or 20 kilometers of the CBD because they feel like, you know, 21 kilometers out of the CBD is suddenly just barren wasteland where the properties are, you know, just, you know, full of, you know, people on Centrelink and unemployed, you know, that kind of stigma to it. But the reality of the fact is, you know, wherever you are, whichever capital city that you live in, even regional areas, you know, you've got nice pockets everywhere. You know, there's definitely areas that you should definitely stay away from. You know, it's very, very low socio areas where it's, you know, probably common knowledge that it's extremely, you know, may not be the best place to live in. But then there are very sort of, you know, average or quite nice, you know, just suburban family friendly areas that even though you might not want to live in yourself, because you maybe have grown up in a or live in a different kind of situation or lifestyle, but those can make some of the best investment areas, you know. And from an affordability perspective, it also ties in very well, you know, from a cash flow perspective and buying properties that are not sort of overextending yourself when it comes to getting loans, and you're kind of spreading that risk across multiple assets and things like that. So, you know, sometimes it's really important not to be blinded by your own perceptions about what's acceptable and what isn't. And once you kind of get past that hurdle, it enables you to just look at it from a very black and white perspective, you know, and just invest in properties that will ultimately achieve your own personal goals.
Thank you to buyer's agent Simon Liu, our guest on this special episode of Invest Like a Pro presented by Housefinder. Also, for being a loyal listener of the podcast, I've asked Simon to offer a free 1-hour strategy session, normally valued at $500, to help you put together an actionable property plan. To get your free strategy session, simply visit housefinder.com.au and fill out the contact form, or call Simon directly on 0415 626 342 and quote, Property Investory.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.